This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
We're back again this week to talk about another Jurassic Park movie. They just keep releasing these Jurassic Park movies. It's crazy.
Yeah, I can't complain, though.
You know. Well, yeah, no, of course you can't.
I can't. Dinosaur
heaven.
My catnip over here. Yeah, End of Oak Street, it was kind of this surprise. No one really knew what it was. It was... from the writer of It Follows, writer/director, and was produced by J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot.
Yes.
But no one knew like what it was about until the first trailer earlier this year when it was revealed that it's about a family in sort of an 80s suburban neighborhood who wake up to realize they've been transported to the Jurassic period. Dinosaurs galore. So yeah, that's the premise. Sold, you know.
And the trailer really didn't give you much beyond the premise. It was like, it was just sort of shots from the beginning of the movie where Anne Hathaway's like, I don't think we're like in the same time period or whatever her line is. Like they go on the porch and see a dinosaur and she's like, I don't think we're here anymore.
That's a direct quote.
Yes.
Perfectly executed by Matt.
Yes,
really brilliant. Number one, Anne Hathaway's number one fan dialed in for this one. I mean, that's the thing is we've talked about this a few times this year because you're a Hatha lover.
Annie girl.
I don't know. What's the fandom's name?
I don't know if we have a fandom. Because for a long time, it was mostly haters, which is why the half of haters is a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was, you know, a lone reed standing against the wind of,
I was there with you.
That's true. Although I will say, at the beginning of this year, I was very skeptical of these movies that she's in and thought that we could end up with, like, five bad movies in a row.
Yeah.
But now, I think we've basically gotten four good movies, like... I think mileage varies a little bit on some of them, but
I was going to say, I'm like, wait, I thought you didn't like the first two.
I didn't love Mother Mary, but a lot of people did.
Okay,
I loved Devil Wears Prada too.
Yes. Okay.
Odyssey. Great. Mm. And The End of Oak Street. Also great.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm a little bit like, wait, is Verity going to be sort of like the housemaid kind of like campy thing that I'm also going to enjoy? Like, is she
going to
go
takeaway? Don't you think it would be bookends of like that was bad? So for you, it would be Mother Mary and Verity as sort of a humbling valley to Anne Hathaway's earlier middle peaks, you know?
Yeah, but I don't think if Verity is bad, I'm not going to dislike it in the same way that I dislike Mother Mary. Like Mother Mary is trying things, and Mother Mary like is a good Anne Hathaway performance. It's just in a movie that I was kind of like, I want more from this. Whereas Verity, I don't think I'm gonna leave that movie going, oh, I wish it was so restrained and I wish that it had given us more of what I was looking for.
God, I hate Verity. Every time I think about it or see the trailer, I'm just like disgusted by us as a society.
The book was so bad, but I sort of deleted it from my brain. Like, I can't really remember what it's about because
I read
it.
Well, because you were like the Kickstarter group. You're the early beta reader for Miss Colleen Hoover. You were the number one fan getting the books before Book Talk even told you to read it.
That can't be true. We read it for a book club and like it had to have been popular. I did read it. It was during COVID though. I do know that.
Okay.
So I think I read it.
I thought you said you did it like in college. Didn't we have this whole conversation last time where you had to Google when the movie was released?
In college?
When the book was released.
No, I read Verity for book club. I would not have picked up Verity to read it like on my own.
I swear, I'm gonna look through our transcripts. I like where we've talked about this.
You can look through the. I am 100% certain of when I read this.
Who would that have been?
You, I don't know. You're
talking.
You're mixing me up with somebody else.
Yeah,
because I read. We chose Verity for our book club book. It was during the pandemic because I read it while I was in Florida. And I remember reading it in like a day and a half and just sort of being like annoyed and getting to the point where there had been so many sex scenes that whenever a new sex scene started, I sort of just like skimmed through it a couple pages because it wasn't like even horny anymore.
Yeah.
It had been so much of it.
Nasty. Yeah. So Verity, I'm not looking forward to it. I am a more... you know, reserved Anne Hathaway fan at this point. I liked Mother Mary, didn't like Devil Wears Prada 2, but I did like End of Oak Street.
I saw this movie and I was like, I try not to get my hopes up about these kinds of things because there's been so many movies that I've seen and thought, oh, Shelby's going to love this. And then for some, you know, odd sort of reason, you're like, actually, that was the worst movie ever because, you know, like it was set in the 80s, but the hair was in the 90s and I didn't like that.
Right, of course,
picking up on niche details.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, if she doesn't like this movie, like I'm going to lose my mind.
And who am I? Yeah.
This is the most Shelby movie ever. It's truly nothing but a family running around hiding from dinosaurs.
There's and literally my dreams, honestly.
So little like preamble to the dinosaurs arriving. And then once the dinosaurs are there, there's very little sort of like planning or you know, trying to figure stuff out or hunkering down. It's like dinosaur chase, dinosaur chase, dinosaur fight, dinosaur chase.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of different dinosaurs. They're coming at them from different directions.
Yeah.
They're only in the dinosaur world for like what, a day? 2 days? Like it's not very long.
I think it's 2 nights. Because I'm trying to think.
It's just like straight up dino attacks.
No, I know. Like this is like, I mean, yeah. I'm a sucker for dinosaurs. I mean, Jurassic Park is one of the greatest films ever made. Like, I'm sorry, that's just a fact. And it defined my childhood. And I would have like nightmares I secretly enjoyed about like dinosaurs crashing a restaurant I was at, or, you know, having to hide in a garage from a dinosaur just in my dreams. And I remember them, loved them. I love a dinosaur flick. And they've all been so disappointing recently, like from obviously the Jurassic World spinoffs, where it's like things are getting more and more weird. The velociraptors are like trained monkeys. They're like basically riding bikes at this point. There's new dinosaurs that just look fugly as hell. Even like 65, that Adam Driver movie that came out, it was like, oops, dinosaurs, but it was like badly done and they weren't real dinosaurs. So it was sort of like, what's the point here? I'm trying to think of other dinosaur flicks. Because we haven't really, for how large dinosaurs loom in our zeitgeist as human beings, 65 million years removed from them, we really don't get a lot of original dino content, you know?
Well, I mean, I think the fact, like, there's only really two ways you can do a dinosaur movie. There's either, like, it's a movie that's set in the Jurassic period, you know, like Land Before Time kind of a thing. Mm. Or it's a movie where somehow or another there's dinosaurs in modern day society. Mm-hmm. But I think because of Jurassic Park, like being a hit book, being, you know, one of the most iconic movies of all time, and then leading to this gigantic franchise that's gone on for 3 decades, it's hard, I think, to sort of come up with a reason for why to make a different dinosaur movie where dinosaurs are in the modern day. Like, I think that probably those have been pitched and studios have been like, well, yeah, but we already have Jurassic Park. So what, what, like how, like what is the sort of out here?
Yeah.
I think the thing that's interesting with this movie is that because of like the wormhole aspect of it, it's, you can kind of pitch it as like a time travel movie in addition to the dinosaur element, which obviously is not a part of Jurassic World. Something though that I saw people talking about online is, so the end of Oak Street is set in 1982, which is before Jurassic Park comes out. the movie. And so they were saying like, oh, if like nobody in this movie would be familiar with Jurassic Park and dinosaurs sort of like weren't as big of a deal before Jurassic Park. So they were like, people should have been more confused about like what was happening because they didn't really know. Like
dinosaurs didn't exist in
They didn't have like the same like, you know, like attachment. Now it's like everybody knows what a T-Rex is, everybody knows whatever.
I don't think that's true. Like
did in the eight, you don't think people know what a T-Rex is?
No, I'm saying I think people were enamored. I think dinosaurs have held
so a even spot. Before Jurassic Park, you think people were really interested in Tyrannosaurus Rexes?
Yeah. I'll ask my dad. He's old.
Okay. Perfect. Remember the 80s? Dad. Remember 1982? Did people care about dinosaurs then?
Did you care about dinos as a kid?
Okay. We're sending a text. We'll have to.
Yeah, I'll have to circle back. Dial up the internet, figure it out, find an old diary entry to remember what it was like 70 years ago.
Because I feel like dinosaurs were huge when we were kids, but that would have been like directly after Jurassic Park.
But like he wrote Jurassic Park, you know what I mean? Like, and Land Before Time was pre Jurassic Park, wasn't it?
I don't think so, but I guess I don't know. Okay,
Land Before Time
came out in 1988.
Oh, yeah, that's before. So stuck on that. Okay, you got to stop getting your theories off of TikTok. They aren't doing their research. I think dinosaurs have been beloved.
So what you're saying is that Jurassic Park
is derivative.
Is based on Land Before Time.
Exactly. Well, when did he publish it? It was like,
that's actually 90? A great question. When did Jurassic Park, the book, come out? Because this could really, 93? You know, clear 1990. So he probably saw Land Before Time then was like, wow, let me write Jurassic Park.
Cool. Yeah.
And then he wrote it and then it became a movie. Obviously.
Spielberg found it. Yeah. Spielberg was like, I've never heard of this Tyrannosaurus Rex before. What a scary creature. And then they made it. And then everyone else in the world realized, wow, dinosaurs, they're kind of dope.
Right. Yes. Interesting. Land Before Time was produced by George Lucas and Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
So that was before Jurassic Park.
Yeah, because dinosaurs are cool. Like you're saying.
But so Steven Spielberg was on a dinosaur train before Michael Crichton was on the dinosaur train.
I don't know when you begin writing something like Jurassic Park, but. But yeah, probably, I guess, yeah. Yeah, let's say that.
Land Before Time, if it came out in 1988, like that was obviously in the works before that, like probably like 1995, 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Or 1985, 1986.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is dinosaurs are, they've been around, you know, people have been making up whatever their theories are about how they look, what they ate, how they behaved.
And
I just love that. Yeah. And so this one. Yeah. So circling back to up to End of Oak Street, it's like it was refreshing to have something not weighed down with the IP of Jurassic Park and the like kookier ways they've been trying to explain why they're back at the park and what actually happened at the park and how, you know, like blah blah blah. It's just like Jurassic World has become so bloated that even if I found myself engaged in, say, Jonathan Bailey's American accent, it never really struck the same sort of thrill and novelty as the original Jurassic Park. So End of Oak Street, it was like, okay, I know this is a dinosaur flick. It can either be like super campy, like something like Anaconda, or it'll play it pretty straight and not bother with like excusing its own existence, you know, like trying to make something goofy out of it. And I feel like it struck the right tone. And they were really intentional with wanting to set this like in the 80s. Because there's that nostalgia factor and there's a simplicity and there's like for everyone in the audience, such as me, we've all like had those imaginary, like, what if a dinosaur popped up in my garage right now? Right? Is that a shared experience?
I don't know, but sure.
But so, yeah, I felt like it was a really smart way to kind of like tell a dinosaur story when we're all coming in with preconceived notions of what a dinosaur story is and the beats it has to hit.
It's such a simple premise.
Yeah.
And not only is it a simple premise, but they really like, they don't do any explaining for anything that doesn't need to be explained. Mm-hmm. And there's such like a streamlining of storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think another thing with Jurassic Park that is hard is like, there's the set pieces where they're with the dinosaurs, and then there's all of the sort of like in-between scenes where there's a lot of setup of different things. Mm-hmm. And this movie doesn't really have that. The like interpersonal conflicts that happen with this family are happening like at the same time as the dinosaur stuff is happening. So you really move through it quickly. And they spend no time like explaining the rules of the situation because the family also doesn't know what the rules are.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you wake up one morning and all of a sudden you're back in the Jurassic period and there's dinosaurs killing everybody. And you're sort of like wander around your neighborhood briefly and watch a bunch of people get killed, like mangled by dinosaurs, like sort of in the background of scenes, which is very funny.
Iconic.
And again, like moves through the plot quickly.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, there's actually these wormholes. The wormholes are transporting people to different time periods. We just have to get into a wormhole and then we can go back to the real world and bada boom, bada bing. That's it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They it's don't all, need to do anything
yeah.
else.
Yeah. And it really worked. It had like that feel, which they also mentioned wanting to set it in the 80s, of like those 80s monster flicks from Jaws, Jurassic Park, like any of these creature features where you are just kind of thrown into it. And it doesn't mean that they don't care about the details, but it's just there's like a slice of life element to being thrown into this relationship and having to navigate that while at the same time dealing with the wildest thing you could ever imagine happening. And not being afraid to, spill some guts and just throw neighbors to the wolves, so to speak.
Well, especially with Marvel, I mean, we talked about last week about how like Gen Z doesn't like, nudity or whatever. Mm-hmm. I get so frustrated with like Marvel, Star Wars, like these movies where they do not want to kill someone.
Jurassic World,
like,
yeah.
Yes, it's like they don't want to kill someone who's a main character, but they also just don't want to kill anyone, period. I think they're trying to get this PG-13 rating. They want kids to be able to come to see the movie. So they really are like, oh, the Mandalorian's going to kick someone. They're going to fall down. And like, that's the extent of the violence that we have. And this movie, the first sort of time that we encounter the dinosaur is when like the kindly old neighbor lady is found like
people be
murdered, covered in blood on the floor of her kitchen. And when that happened, I thought, oh, okay, we are doing something here.
Yeah.
Like, this is not going to be a safe movie where everybody survives. It's like, no, we've already killed the nice old neighbor lady. So that means that kind of anyone can go, which is fun.
It was great. It was just so refreshing. And there's all these think pieces that have been done about like, oh, the lessons Hollywood needs to learn from this. And it really just seems like straightforward is to have a good story and to like do it. Like, that's it. Like, this guy was like, he just decided to write this script. Obviously, it got into the right hands. J.J. Abrams was excited about it, excited about original ideas. And they just managed to get everyone on board, which is a nice, refreshing thing that's been happening more and more. And hopefully these sort of features allow studios to realize it's okay to take chances, because this has gotten really good press. I don't know if it's like showed up in numbers per se, because it's a hard summer to compete with everyone already spending money on $30 IMAX tickets for The Odyssey and Spider-Man, and then there's this little tiny dino movie which opened mildly well, I believe.
Yeah, it's weird because it has gotten incredible reviews from critics. Like, like everybody loved it. Everyone's like, oh, this is the best Jurassic Park movie, like since Jurassic Park. This is incredible. Like, you've got to go see it. Original storytelling. I think people, and then I think critics thought that it was going to do better than it did. It's made $52 million worldwide right now, which like is not that much, especially since the movie, the budget was like 85. But I do think this is the type of movie that like will build with word of mouth, if not in theaters, then like once it hits streaming and once it's on airplanes and stuff. Like, this feels like a movie that a lot of people are gonna see kind of haphazardly at some point and then be like, wait a second, that's really good, like let me tell people about it. But I saw it, loved it. The people in my theater saw it, loved it. But then I've had multiple friends, and like anecdotally from looking at Letterboxd, of people who are not like movie critics, like just like sort of normie people, who were like, that was actually a bad movie. Like, I did not like that. I thought it was bad. Such. And I'm just like, I don't understand where that is coming from. Like,
yeah.
Like the end of Oaks or One Night Only, like that's a movie where it's like, okay, if someone says that the movie's bad, I understand that. Like, I like the movie.
You get it. Yeah.
But I can accept the criticism. I don't think it's that crazy that that movie has like a 50% or whatever. Yeah. Like, it makes sense.
Lower. Yeah.
This movie, I feel like, is objectively good, but is also like a crowd pleaser. And I'm like, if the snooty critics like this, then I don't understand how normal people going to the movie theater wouldn't love this movie where, you know, it's just like dinosaurs chasing people around for 90 minutes.
I know. I mean, I do feel like, because like if you look on Letterboxd, it's like a 3-star, but I do think it's on Letterboxd, people are more like 3-star means good. You know what I mean? So I haven't seen like active haters who are like, this is bad.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, I had a friend text me after I had said that I really liked it, and he went to the theater and was like, I
want drop him.
We both thought it was really bad. And I was like, I don't know.
I think people want this, like, I think it's like, I mean, obviously I don't know your friend, but I do feel like there's a trend where we do think if we're going to have a seemingly goofy premise of like dinosaurs or a monster, then it has to be played for laughs. That would be my take, is like they want the Jumanji style.
Here are some caper. Of the things that he said. He said, the script was terrible. All the actors felt like they were in different movies. The tone was all over the place. There was zero suspense. I'm like, what? And then he said, I thought the first 20 minutes were excellent. I was like, oh, Jaws, but with dinosaurs. Good idea. And the dialogue was terrible, and truly no character decision made any sense. I'm like, what? And then he says, like the random lesbian doctor for no reason. It just did nothing for the story. Like textbook pandering.
And that's funny.
I was like, like,
is it pandering if they don't mention it in either way, you know?
I'm like, I don't think it was, like,
yeah, I don't didn't have a coming out. Yeah.
I'm like, and this is a gay friend, but I was like, I sort of feel like that's a little low key homophobic. To be like,
there's a gay girl. Yeah.
It's like pandering to the audience. And I'm like, no, there's gay people in life. Yeah. Like if dinosaurs attacked a town, there would be random gay people in the town. And just because the daughter of the main family is a lesbian.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't.
And that's not even in the script. Okay. So she doesn't ever come out. She doesn't identify herself.
Right.
There's like the whispers of a crush and then the end of the, you know, togetherness. Very cute. But I wouldn't say it's like something like pandering to me is like Marvel getting all the girls in a row and saying like, try and stop us.
Right. No, exactly. Where it's like, this actually makes no sense. Then he goes, why do you need a casual crush in the middle of being hunted by dinosaurs?
Because you're a teenager.
That's what I said.
Because you're a teenager.
I said, teenagers are the craziest, horniest creatures on earth. Like 1,000%. And I said, not to, you know, bring in high literature here, but I said the whole point of the Diary of Anne Frank is that she's in this terrible situation and she still has a crush on somebody. You know what I mean? It's like a teenager is going to have a crush no matter what. They could be locked in an attic in the middle of the Holocaust and they still have a crush on someone. I do think that a lesbian daughter in a dinosaur movie would still be falling in love with the neighbor. Like,
that is so true, Matt. Like, honestly, circle it up. Like, that's, yeah, such a good point. Valid.
Like teenagers are so horny and so, like, lovesick for things that they will ruin all kinds of stuff. Like, my sister, who was obsessed with One Direction, had never met One Direction, like, was depressed and refused to do stuff for a whole vacation we were on because Zayn announced that he was leaving the band, and she wasn't even in love with Zayn. Like, like, that's not the one she even liked, and she was inconsolable. So,
yeah, it's kind of like, it's, I love that. I, you know, I'm a nitpicker sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes you just can't like a thing.
Right.
But I do think it's interesting when people decide not to like something.
Well, yes.
And like, I'm curious, like, this friend's take on something like The Odyssey, or, you know, these like highbrow vehicles where it's like artsy, whereas this is more like Super 8. This is giving creature feature. This isn't like attempting to reckon with our racial history like Sinners. It is a dinosaur movie that seems pretty confident in what it wants to do, and it does it. And I don't mean that in like a demeaning, like, oh, it's just shallow, it's silly, it's dumb. But just like, it wasn't biting off more than it could chew. So like, holding it up to some standard that it never claimed to want to hit is sort of like, okay.
And I thought, and like, so he's, you know, like, the script is terrible, one of his things. I think the script is really good, actually.
Yeah.
It is a little bit like, screenplay 101 kind of, in the ways that it's like, okay, every character has to be established with sort of like some sort of personality thing. There has to be a conflict for everybody that has to be resolved. Like, but I think that as we've learned watching movies all these years, doing something that seems really simple and straightforward well is very hard. Like, they set up the four members of the family really efficiently at the beginning, where it's like, you have Anne Hathaway, she's secretly writing a novel in the basement, but she like doesn't really like her husband. She like, there's not a connection there. He lost his job and is pretending to like go to work, but is actually just delivering pizzas, and they are like in a relationship that does not seem to be going places.
Maybe breaking yes up. Yeah.
And then they have two kids, one of whom is like a slightly angsty teenage daughter, and then the son who like just wants everything to be okay and to play with his dog.
Yeah, his and emotional like, support animal.
Right. And it's like, that is set up so easily. Mm-hmm. And yes, like, it is perhaps not super realistic that like all of these, you know, beats are put together so quickly, but I'm like, then you can get on with it into the actual part of the movie. Like, we didn't need an extra 20 minutes at the beginning setting things up. And also, the beginning was the part that he supposedly liked. And then you get into the middle of the movie, and I'm like, that's not really, like, then there's not really a,
there's it's no
not
script.
About script. Yeah. It's about, like, action set pieces, and it moves really smoothly from one thing to another, where these different dinosaurs are coming in and out of the picture, where the dog leaves. So, like, I think they keep coming up with reasons, obviously, why the family needs to leave the house. And every time you're sort of like, don't leave the house. But they're compelling enough reasons that you kind of understand why they would.
Well,
do
and
that,
there's like,
you know,
so many worse, like, dumb kid movies, like A Quiet Place, Quiet Place 2. And also, you know what, actually, I watched that Netflix movie right before I went and saw this, the Last House, The Last House.
Oh,
have you
yeah,
heard of it
that.
Or seen it? Terrible. Like, that's bad. And I think that is what a bad script looks like. That's what inconceivable characters look like. That's what like a forced monster flick that doesn't know what it wants to do or say looks like. Like nothing in that movie works either logically or emotionally or entertainingly. And so there are so many ways to throw in like a family dynamic and then put it through hell and see what happens. And usually it's annoying kids, dumb kids, bad like choices. But I feel like this was so refreshing because they all, it didn't really matter. Like they could have chosen any family on this block to make this movie and it would have been interesting. And so much of the, you know, intrigue and horror of this film is watching the like the dinosaurs in the background. Like, you know,
right.
It's like so much of it is happening off screen or just out of frame. And that's like what, as an audience, is like, you know, you're nervous, you're anxious, you're watching, you're laughing, you're like, oh my God, they don't see the Velociraptor sneaking up on them type thing. And so I felt like that, like you said, like what was smart about this is like, yeah, you have tropes maybe in these characters, but it never became like, oh, but we have to get them all to this like one point to make it like pay off emotionally. Like it seemed like,
right,
there was something refreshing in how they allowed these characters to kind of exist and have their angsty moments, both as a tense couple having their blow up fight in the middle of a catastrophe, or the kids having a shared crush on the new neighbor girl who sometimes randomly comes into their, you know, situation. And at the same time, it just allowed the story to play out in what was an believable way for what would happen if your neighborhood was suddenly trapped by dinosaurs. And so it's like the script thing, it just like, I think it did it well, you know?
And I think that like the efficiency with the storytelling, where rather than have to get a bunch of scenes where we watch, you know, different people get killed or whatever, it's like driving the car through the neighborhood and just through the windows, you see people getting like killed or swiped up or whatever, and you know, oh wait, the stakes are high, even if like the family doesn't necessarily realize it. Or like the way that they introduce the snake coming out of the swimming pool at one scene, and so then when it's coming through the house later, you are already sort of terrified of it because you've seen it in the background even though the family hasn't seen it. I think that the scene with the snake and also the scene with the T-Rex are just like incredible set pieces. Like so fun, instantly stick in your mind. And I guess, you know, to talk spoilers, which I mean, we already sort of are, but like the choice to kill
iconic
Ewan McGregor,
so good,
like two-thirds through the movie, is so shocking because we've seen so many, you know, Jurassic Park movies, whatever, like these family kind of movies, and they're never killing off the dad. Like that's not something that happens. You think, okay, they're gonna get through it all, or if the dad dies, it's gonna be like in some sort of like big like, final like sacrificial moment.
Exactly.
And he just gets like eaten by the T-Rex in a way that is so out of the
brutal.
Blue and so brutal, where it's like it first bites off his leg and you're like, oh my gosh, like now the poor guy like, doesn't have a leg anymore, and then it's like nope. It's chomping the whole thing. And then you have to watch the family sort of like grieve and go and sort through those emotions while they're trying to like escape and get to this time, the wormhole. It's just like, and that section, like post his death through when they finally get through the wormhole, it's like every scene is packed with so much emotion because they're like actively grieving, but then they're still like having to go through, and they obviously don't want anybody else to die, but like it's just
And like nobody's like perfect in this movie, and no one's like having their big emotional speech or like bringing them together. Like honestly, right after that loss, you watch Anne Hathaway like lose her shit at the kids, and that felt like a real moment. Like she's not being the perfect mother, she's not being the like sensitive, thoughtful, like we'll have to do this for your dad or whatever. And then on top of that, as they're searching for the wormhole, the funniest like best scene was this kid having to time his jump into the flashing wormhole, and he misses it and crashes two stories down, like, and breaks his
leg. And then they all have to go back down.
They have to come back up. And that was, like, so refreshingly realistic to me, where usually everything works out, you know, perfectly, or, like, suddenly these kids are super talented archers, but this boy is always, like, bad at everything he does. Like, he can't shoot an arrow, even though that's supposedly his whole shtick, and then he's supposed to jump on the count of five and he waits till six or whatever, and, like, that just felt, like, more real and honest to, like, the normie experience of having to, like, survive this sort of ridiculous situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, and jumping into the wormhole didn't even look that difficult. Like, it was,
I know. Like there's a lot of time. I know. And so it was just like, it was little things like that where it felt more concerned with, like, the human element of, like, this nightmare rather than making, like, an action thriller movie. Because, like, yeah, in another world, it would have turned out that he had this secret skill for archery and he shot the T-Rex right between the eyes and saved the girl. But it was like he was getting pummeled by his, like, high school friend's brother. He was, like, always tripping up. He's searching this dumb dog named Starbuck, singular. And it's just, like, I don't know. It was kind of iconic and, like, refreshing to have these sort of derpy characters. And that made it feel more rooted in real moments. Because I liked the character notes, not because I felt like, oh my God, these are my people. I love them. They're so real and deep and they have something to say. But just the little details that they each brought to their roles was, like, really nice. Like, when the basement floods and Anne Hathaway's character realizes she lost her entire manuscript, but she can't talk about it because she hasn't told any of her family. Right. And it's, like, gut-wrenching. It's, like, sad. And she plays it off so well as this, like, you know, that's its own story that could have been its own movie of, like, the mother, you know, making her book a reality type thing. And then when, honestly, one of my favorite parts is when the daughter goes in the car and she's just, like, listening to a song on the, on the radio. And it's just, like, little things like that that allow them to feel real. And her crush on the friend, because it's, like, these are people with real emotions, and those emotions don't just go away because you happen to be faced with a velociraptor, you know?
Right. Well, and, like, the note of, oh, the different characters seem like they're in different movies. I'm like, I don't think so. Like,
I know.
They all seem, like, House of Gucci, when people said, oh, the actors are in different movies, it's like, yes, they are. And that is part of why the reason why I love House of Gucci, but it's like, it's because the performances are extreme in so many different ways, where this, it's like they're all distressed, like nobody's giving that weird, like nobody's giving a weird performance. I feel like they're all sort of whatever, and I like the fact that this is what is, like, this is what it looks like if a normal family
exactly
has to go through this. It's not like the Hunger Games, you know, where, oh, we're picking Katniss and she's this, like, one in a million, like, super charismatic but also really good at archery, like oh, she's, it's like, if this
the
is
baker,
like, if we
can
were
paint
to,
yeah
right yeah, it's like, this is like if we were going to the Hunger Games through one of the perspectives of the kids who get, like, killed off in the first half.
Well, and, like, even the relationship dynamic, like, they kept on butting heads in the same way that, like, a married couple would, where she's always like, just face the facts. And he's like, well, where's the joy in that? I'm going to be, like, optimistic. And it's like, neither's right or wrong. And they both are kind of, you know, screwed in the end because they're faced with this dinosaur situation. But I liked that those remained. And it wasn't, like, a happy, like, come to Jesus moment of, like, you were always right and I love you no matter what. Like, it all felt very real. And so that added to when he died, like, sort of how you would feel about that. I saw a review that was like, I had to give this one star because she started crying over the picture of her husband in front of the dinosaurs fucking. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't believe people complaining about that sort of thing are married or in, like, long-term committed relationships, where it's like, yeah, like, it's not gonna be like you don't have those cliche flashbacks of like rolling around in white sheets when your partner dies and like, oh, you lost an angel. It's like the dumbest shit that will remind you of them. And so I kind of thought that was frankly iconic, and I would have that frame too, you know?
Well, and the, I think people talked about this with the invite as well, but that like part of the thing that bonds a couple together is like the sense of humor and the weird moments of like, of like the moment where Seth Rogen and Olivia Wilde like are the closest is when they're sort of like gossiping about the other couple. Like, look, they've got problems. Yeah. Like, and I think it's the same thing with this. Like the moments that endear you to a person that make you like the person are the funny moments, are the moments where like you're having a connection. And if you, even like with your worst enemy, stumbled upon a like brontosauruses fucking each other, you would be like, wait, this is funny, like, so let's take funny. A moment to watch this, like you would obviously take a picture if obviously. You had a phone or a camera, and then I do think that that would be like a pleasant memory for you. And I think that the if we talk about good script writing, like the dynamics that they set up between Ewan McGregor and Anne Hathaway like show you both why they would have gotten together at one point, but also why their relationship is difficult, but also as to how their relationship could get better. It's not like, it's not like, you know, one of them did some terrible, awful thing. Right. It's that she's just like a little too pragmatic and pessimistic, and he's just a little too optimistic. And when you put them in a difficult situation, like, he's not going to quite be able to like rise to the level that she needs him to, but then, and she's going to get frustrated by that. But then at the same time, he's going to be like, well, why are you always such a Debbie Downer? But you can see how when they met,
wait,
like,
is this play about us? Mm-hmm. Like,
and he like loved One Night Only and she was hateful about it. No, but like you can see how also that would appeal to you. Like if you're someone who is more like optimistic, head in the clouds, you are going to be attracted to somebody who like has their shit together and knows what's going on and is like, yes, like let me plan something. Where if you're somebody who's a little too like anal, you're attracted to a person who's like a little bit class clown, like let my hair down, sort of romp around kind of a person. And I thought, they built that whole dynamic. Like, I can see the history of their relationship without them ever having to talk about it just by, like, the character notes in the movie, which is why I'm like, no, the script is actually incredible.
Yeah, I think so. And honestly, I was like, emotional seeing the Bad Robot logo come up beforehand. Because, like, where has J.J. Abrams been? Yeah.
Well, he's been working on Gracie Abrams' music career.
Yeah, good dad, good dad. I forgot. Because, like, yeah, when Super 8 came out, it was similar, like, shock and awe. Like, everyone was like, wow, this is actually good. There was also the similar, like, oh, this is derivative, this is lame, this is badly written, this is, these kids don't act this way. And I think there's something like fun about having this nostalgia factor of the 80s and this like simpler phase, and you don't have to contend with the like, you know, ChatGPT of it all or smartphones or like Google Maps not loading in this world. It's just very simple and straightforward, and it allows the like horror and excitement of the premise to just propel the movie forward instead of getting burdened with like, well, what about this and how would this have happened and does it really make sense of this? You know, I was like, no, you get to watch the annoying neighbor get pecked to death on his roof while while shooting a gun haphazardly at these dinosaurs, and yeah, you get to see Ewan McGregor's chest get eaten out, just destroyed by this. And honestly, the dinosaur like sneaking up on them, not even sneaking, because it's just kind of like, you know, it's the T-Rex vibe. It's just kind of trolling down the street and then sees them and starts to pick up speed. And every little detail was so fun. Like it was fun, it was scary, but it didn't have to be like burdened by some sort of existential crisis or, you know. Right. Which is ironic because I felt like that was my issue with It Follows. It was like, okay, I get it. STDs.
I never saw It Follows, so I can't really connect to that. But I did see Under the Silver Lake, which was his most recent movie, which was crazy. So, and bad in like a weird, heady, surrealist way. So I'm shocked that he managed to get
it. I know. This was just so straightforward. It was just, and honestly, surprising. Like, I loved the surprise of Ewan McGregor dying. And I honestly, I was slow on the uptick of like, oh, they're back in time, so she can save him. Like, so they, when they jump through the wormhole, they also jump through time. I don't know why. I'm not in college learning about all this, but the wormhole lets them go back in time, and she does the neighborly thing and orders a pizza so her husband can come not be sucked into the wormhole, and she saves all her neighbors, which is honestly above and beyond. I literally would not have thought of that, I'm sorry to say.
So this is something I think is interesting that I want to discuss. So she, like, they jump to the time hole, or the wormhole. They realize they're like outside of the range of the bubble that's going to take them back in time.
On the other side of Oak Street, yeah.
Right. And so they're like, oh, or she's like, I have to go make a phone call. He comes, delivers the pizza. She, you know, and then we find out later that she also called all of these neighbors and saved them and got them out of the area. And also the neighbor girl.
Yeah. The hot girl.
Who jumps back earlier.
Yeah.
She takes her whole family out of the situation, including the version of herself from the past.
Iconic. And
so I think it's in one, I'm like, interesting that then there's now two of this girl because she, you know, saved the past version of herself. But I'm like, it's also interesting that Anne Hathaway did not try to say, like, only wanted Ewan McGregor, like, and so called him with the pizza delivery so that he would come, but not with the whole family. But
right. Also, oh, interesting.
I'm like, does that mean, like, so then there's this
so separate, now you're like, wait.
Well, but,
right. Okay.
But so that means that there's like a separate version where the three of them minus Ewan McGregor get sucked to the past and then presumably don't
the
get to the wormhole or die because he's not in there anymore.
Oh my gosh.
So I am kind of like, she does like doom a version of herself to be eaten by a dinosaur by making this decision. But again, they don't really.
Hadn't thought of that.
But that's not something that's, like, in the movie.
No,
that's only something that you would think about, like, afterward.
I'm like, okay.
And so but I like that as well, that this, like, movie has sort of questions and things you can ponder without going and trying to give too many, like, rules.
I think I would have done what she did. Because it's like, what's the point in saving myself? I'm already saved. You know, like, I would believe that I'm the same person. And then, obviously, maybe once I see my daughter's girlfriend's family, I would be like, oh. But I think it would have been too, like, confusing, you know, to, like, think about saving your old self.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of think that both of them did it without really,
I think the
girl went back to save the family
She's
and then sort of probably realized like, oh wait, but I like now I'm here with myself. So whatever, like, I'm not going to tell her like, no, you have to stay. And I think with Anne Hathaway, like when she came through and saw that the time was different, she was like, oh, I have to get you and McGregor here. Like, he's the one who died. I don't think that she probably, because it was only like 20 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And especially if she's trying to save all of these neighbors as well, she's not really thinking about saving another version of herself, because in her mind, she is like, she's not.
But
like,
so
she's
then
fine.
is that a timeline? Is there... So now I'm going to get lost in the time travel of it, the time travel rules. Because if she doesn't, because she changed. So there's just a separate timeline now. That's what we would have to accept as scientists and theorists, is that there's just a separate timeline that has a version of her going into the monster world without Ewan McGregor and what happens there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not like she could then jump through the wormhole and then come back and it's like, whoa, there's three Anne Hathaways now.
I mean, I think she could have done that. I think, like, theoretically, she could have just kept going through the wormhole and coming out
just
as many times
up,
as she wanted. But, like, every time you go through, like, you know, I think it would have ended up someone it's like differently.
You
can't,
you might not find it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like the wormhole is probably in the same place every time.
Yeah.
But like, can you get there?
Right.
Because if anything changes, you know, it's like the dinosaur might be in a different place. And if you die at any of those points, then obviously you can't come back.
Right.
So,
provocative.
Because I think like then in the new version of the wormhole, he's not there, but also all of the other people who she saved aren't there. So the whole situation is different, and probably the three of them just get eaten at some point, and that's the end of it.
So if you're neighbor Debbie and she calls you, number one, are you listening to her?
Well, that's what I was trying to think, is like, I think you would have to lie to the person. Yeah. And be like, oh, there's like a gas leak or something. Like you have to head there, whatever. I don't think you can try to do the dinosaur pitch in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because and then you know once the thing, like once the wormhole switches it out, then like everyone will believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, it being the 80s, they're not checking their phone. They're not like, what are you talking about? I see you in your house over there. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm coming. Thanks for the call.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So then you're Debbie, you've been rescued. And you're like, Anne Hathaway, why didn't you call my neighbor Sue? Do you think that survivor's guilt would eat at you, eat at that relationship?
I don't think so. Because I think you could also, I think that like, once you know the rules of the world, she can easily tell you like, oh, you helped me or you saved me or you whatever. Right. Like, here's a reason why I called you.
Okay.
And that doesn't apply to the neighbors. And obviously she can't call 100 houses in 20 minutes. So it is sort of like, okay, well, it's just like luck.
So then final question, you have an annoying neighbor. What'd you call him?
Well, this is where I think it's interesting that this movie is set in the 80s, because clearly she knows people's telephone numbers. Because she's this is in the 80s, she has them like memorized.
Yeah.
And so I think in that case, you're just like, whose number do I know? I'm calling those people.
Yeah.
It sort of doesn't matter like who they are. I'm just going to call as many numbers as I have memorized. Like, oh, I know the mechanic. I'm calling him. Oh, like I know my school, like my daughter's preschool teacher, like I'm calling her. I think you're less like picking and choosing based on merit and more picking and choosing based on who your number is. My question is like, if you had the opportunity to save yourself and like get to hang out with basically like an identical version of you, like, do you want to do that or do you not want to do that?
I'd have no interest. I have enough alone time with myself. You know what I mean? Like, what would that add to me? What would that bring?
I'm kind of like, would it be like the ultimate best friend or would it be like a nightmare?
It would be a nightmare. I think it'd be like annoying because you already know them. You already know what they'll think. You already know what they've done. There's no like learning about someone. There's no like discovery. And then you're faced with, because, you know, when you're a friend with someone, you've recognized their flaws, but now it's you. So you're like doubling down on your own self-loathing, you know?
Do you think that would make you a better person in the long run, though? If you could like see a version of yourself sort of from a third person and be like, oh, wait, that actually is kind of annoying. I should stop doing that.
I don't know. Because it's also interesting about like, would you always, like, okay, you go to a restaurant. Are you both wanting to order the same thing? Or do these little choices of changing yourself up change you as a person?
I think that you would start very similar and over time you would move in different directions. Because I think even like let's say this happened to me like when I don't know, like 5 years ago or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's
obviously
the doors of it.
I'm not going to try to be spending 24/7 with that person.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, you get an apartment somewhere else, I'll get an apartment here, like we'll hang out. But then as time goes on, it's like, oh, they're watching different shows, they have a different job than I do, they have different friends. Like, I think we would sort of like veer off in different directions, but we have the same baseline. So I think then it would be interesting if like, oh, the other version of me is like, oh, I watched this movie, it was really good, like you should watch it. Then I know, oh, well, like he has good taste because we sort of have the same taste.
Yeah.
But like now he's done something different.
But I also feel like there'd be a dynamic there of like, save your servant type because you rescued yourself. And so they only exist because of you. And I feel like that dynamic would shift the behaviors of yourself.
Well, I'm like, yes and no, though, because also it's like that person sort of is like, is you from a, like,
yeah.
So that person is the one who saved you kind of also.
But psychologically, it's like, I only exist because this person chose to save me.
I don't think I would be as concerned about that. I feel like that would be a more of an issue with like a clone situation.
Okay.
Where it's like one of you has like full knowledge and the other one is like brand new. But I think that, at least for myself, I think if like a replica version of me was like, it's hey. Like,
you have a day on me, like calm down.
Yeah. It's like, oh, like I'm actually cool because I managed to survive this and was like good enough to come back and save a version of me. Like, okay, great. Love this.
Okay. So End of Oak Street part two, where's the wormhole taking the family?
I was thinking of this. I'm like, I don't think that they should do a sequel to this movie.
No, yeah, please, no.
But if they do, I'm like, I think that the obvious answer is like medieval era.
Okay.
Because I think
was thinking more like Titanic. I think that would be.
Oh, yeah.
I think like having a disaster, a specific disaster, but like having to work out how to save people from it without looking cuckoo bananas. I'd like to see that.
Although I kind of feel like the Titanic would be not actually that interesting because you know how to, I mean, like people, I, what, you're like,
is it inevitable though? That's the question.
Who's like, yeah, gotta slow down. There's an iceberg coming. It's like, then if they steer clear of that iceberg, then it's like, okay, right. Well, now what's
the movie? You have to make it all the way up to the pilot. I mean, to the captain. You know, it's like,
oh, how do you play the game? Like a servant or whatever?
Yeah, like you're just a guest and you're acting kind of funky.
Aren't that big. Like, I don't think it would be that hard to get to the pilot. If like that.
But why would he? But okay, here's the other question, Matt. What day did they hit the iceberg and what time? Do you really know? How would you be able to stop them? If you don't actually know what happened, but you know it's going to happen, you know?
Well, I think I would just be like, okay, well, it's one of these nights, so is it tonight? Let me go sort of scream at the
people. They famously were ignoring calls from other ships warning them about icebergs because they wanted to get there fast. So they've already proven, like, that's the thing, is like, you already know these, it seems inevitable, like the disaster playing out the way it does because people are bad and people are dumb.
Yeah, that's why I think it would be less fun if it's like an actual thing we know about.
Yeah, 9/11. Okay, so right, they're on right. flight.
Because then you're like, oh, somebody on this flight's a terrorist. I know it's one of the like Arab people. Like, let me make a stink or whatever. Like, somebody's got a box cutter. Like I feel like with that kind of situation, it either like works and then you diffuse it and then it's not a movie, or it doesn't work and then you sort of are just in the same situation that you were in before.
Yeah.
Where I think you need to go to like some place like ancient Egypt or like something where there's like, there is an element of drama and of danger, but is sort of nebulous, like
the Ice Age,
right? Yeah. I think the Ice Age would also be a good option. Although I'm like,
I don't think they'd survive.
Well, if you were like, I think you're how I think you would just be like frozen to death really quickly.
Yeah. Okay, Pompeii.
Pompeii. LOL. That's like a that's like the secret 9/11 movie where go back and you're like, oh, I'm in ancient Italy, and then at a certain point it like zooms out and it's like Pompeii.
A
like,
little bit of ash rising.
Yes.
Yeah. But no, this is a fun movie. I've recommended it to people who have enjoyed it. I'm sorry your friend has no taste.
No, I mean, I was like, this is embarrassing for you that you didn't like this movie. And he's like, well, my friend who went and saw it with me also didn't like it. And I was like,
I feel
this
like,
is embarrassing for both of you.
Yeah, I feel like there's enough fun. There's enough, like, style to his directing. There was enough, like, gore and horror to the like dinosaur bits. Like I feel like it was a refreshing, nice, original summer blockbuster, which we haven't really had. We haven't had like a good, you know, original caper in a while.
Yeah, because this feels like something that would be in a franchise, you know?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You could see somehow like a superhero ends up in like the dinosaur age, yeah. Or like, yeah, something like that, where this is crazy that it's just like a standalone one-off dinosaur movie.
Yeah. The kids weren't great, you know, chasing the dog was pretty dumb, but he's a dumb tween who carries a crossbow, so it's like, okay, we'll forgive him.
This is why I'm anti-dog. The whole time
I was like, just give up the dog.
I was like, vindicated. It's the dog. Like,
and
the dog,
Starbucks, what is that about? Did Starbucks exist in the 80s? Like,
it's
is Starbucks...
It's a friends.
Oh, okay. It went right over my head.
The
Starbuck.
The first mate in Moby Dick, Captain Ahab's like first mate, I believe's name is Starbuck.
Wow.
Which I'm pretty sure is what Starbucks the coffee chain.
Look at that. You really are a trivia king, aren't you? Okay.
Sorry that I did my college reading.
Yeah. I never read Moby Dick.
I do think that Starbuck is sort of like a famous character name, though. Like
Starbuck?
Well, because like the whole thing about...
You know what happens if you Google Starbuck?
Well, yes, you get Starbucks. But I'm pretty sure that if you go to the Starbucks Wikipedia page, it probably says somewhere on
Starbuck
there that it's named
Wikipedia.
After.
Starbucks is a chain of coffee shops. Starbuck may also refer to places...
They chose... Okay, this is interesting.
Ring name of a professional wrestler.
They chose... Okay, so... somebody that or another, like one of the businessmen recalls that a business partner of his, Terry Heckler, thought words beginning with the letters ST were powerful, leading the founders to create a list of words beginning with ST, hoping to find a brand name. They chose Starbow, a misreading of the mining town Storbow, as in the Cascade Range, named after Pete Storbow, founder and president of the Mount Rainier Riding Club. From there, the group remembers Starbuck, the name of the chief mate in the book Moby Dick. So
nice.
That's how that came up. But the whole point of Moby Dick is that, like, Captain Ahab is supposed to be out just, like, catching these whales, but because Moby Dick bit off his leg a bazillion years ago, or not bit it off, but somehow, like, screwed up his leg, he's like, we have to kill this whale. And everyone else is like, wait, what? Like, I thought we were just on, like, an expedition to kill whales and get whale blubber oil. And he's like, no, we've got to find Moby Dick. And Starbuck, who's his first mate, is like, dude, if you do this, we're all going to die. We shouldn't be doing this. This is a bad idea. We should just be getting the regular whales. Why are we going after Moby Dick? And so, like, Starbuck is kind of, like, the voice of reason and this, like, haunting voice in the book, because he keeps being like, Captain Ahab is crazy. We can't go along with him. And everyone else is like, we've got to find Moby Dick.
Cute.
And then they all end up dying.
Spoiler alert.
For Moby Dick. I do think that we are, with the Odyssey doing well, I would be shocked if we don't get a Moby Dick adaptation in the next 10 years.
I mean, okay.
I'm putting that out there for.
Have you read Whale Fall?
No, but that is coming out earlier or later this year. And a friend who read it said it was disgusting. Did you read it?
No, I haven't read it yet.
Oh. I'm not looking forward to it. Well, I mean, I'm not going to read it, but I'm not part of the movie either. Okay, anything else on the end of Oak Street that we need to talk about?
How do you feel about the title? Because you hate a word salad, but...
Yes, I hate a word salad, but I think this hasn't... Like, Oak Street is, like, enough specificity that I like it. I do sort of forget sometimes what the first part of the title is, of, like...
Yeah.
Is it the beginning... On Oak Street, and
yeah,
the beginning
yeah.
of Oak Street, by Oak Street, like whatever.
Once
but it's
upon
like,
a time at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Oak Street, I think, is like concrete enough that I remember it.
Right. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I I hope one
day. They should have just called it Starbucks Street and called it.
Yeah, exactly. The journey is Starbuck, and what's the kid's name?
The kid's name is Brian.
Starbuck and Brian.
Starbuck and Brian take
Oak Street. The land before Oak Street.
Jurassic Oak Street.
Yeah. But no, I had a fun time. I'm glad it exists. I hope more people see it. And I hope the message isn't to make an End of Oak Street sequel, but to find weirder movies to continue to put on screen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think this made so much money that people are going to be like beating down franchise. The door for a sequel.
Yeah.
So, but we'll be talking about time travel more next week. Because we'll be discussing the hit novel Yesterday. Reread it.
Yeah.
You should reread it? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I want to just have it fresh on my
mind. I will definitely be rereading the Wikipedia page before we talk about it.
Okay. Fair.
But thanks everyone for listening. If you haven't seen The End of Oak Street, go see it. Do not pay any attention to what my friend was texting because he is definitely an idiot, as far as I'm concerned. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye.